Forks and Spoons, Knives and Other Cutlery. I'm your host, Christina.
And I'm Tori.
And this is episode 16 of Culling the Shots, the podcast where we reminisce on the good old Twilight days. We are back once again with another episode of our podcast. And as always, we will start with a icebreaker quiz, which is from BuzzFeed. Because of the section that we are reading is about Jacob, we decided to do a quiz that is also about Jacob, our favorite character. No. So let's jump right into this quiz. Tori, would you like to read the first thing?
So, what are Jacob's sisters' names? Rachel and Rose, Rebecca and Riley, Ramona and Rebecca, or Rachel and Rebecca?
Isn't it Rachel and Rebecca?
Yeah, it's Rachel and Rebecca.
And yep. Like, it's Ramona.
That's a cute name.
Next is, what tribe is Jacob in? Chehalis, Quileute, Quinault, or Kalispo?
Pretty much how I would have said.
I hope it's Quileute because that's the only name that we are familiar with.
It was just totally wrong. How did Jacob's mother die? A car accident, an illness, an altercation with a vampire, or it's never stated? I think it was a car accident, wasn't it?
I think it was too.
Yep. A car accident.
What birthday present does Jacob give Bella in the movie version of New Moon? An old photo of the two of them, a love letter, a dream catcher, or a motorcycle?
In the movie, I think dream catcher, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next question. In what movie do Jacob and Bella kiss? Twilight, New Moon, Eclipse, or Breaking Dawn? Do they kiss in New Moon?
Now that you say it, I'm like, do they kiss in New Moon?
I think it might just be Eclipse, but I don't know. I'm going to go with Eclipse.
I guess also Eclipse. Because honestly, there isn't even much of Jacob and New Moon when you like really think about it. It's like the first half and then...
Yeah.
It's like Bella depressed, a little bit of Jacob. Edward tries to unalive himself, and then that's it.
Yeah, I think it's Eclipse.
Eclipse. Finish this Twilight quote. We used to make blank together when we were little. And the options are sandcastles, blanket forts, mud pies, or dirt cakes.
Mud pies.
Mud pies. I almost said mud pies in the section when I was reading it.
All right, what graduation present does Jacob give Bella in Eclipse? A dream catcher, a necklace, earrings, or a charm bracelet? A charm bracelet. Weren't we just saying that?
Yeah. Wait, so then if that was, because that would have been the graduation present, the charm bracelet. So that, what was the, oh, maybe there wasn't even a present in the book for her birthday.
Maybe.
I think that that might have been what had happened. Oh God, here's another. I can do it. Finish this Eclipse quote. All of a sudden, it's not blank holding you to the planet. It's her. And the options are nature, your feet, the floor, gravity.
Well, obviously it's gravity, but could you imagine if it was, it's not your feet holding.
It's her.
All right. Where does Jacob and Bella's second kiss take place? In the mountains, on the beach, by a lake, or at the Cullen house? I think in the mountains.
I think it would have been in the mountains.
Yeah. Yep. In the mountains.
Yep.
Yep.
Why does Jacob break away from Sam's pack in Breaking Dawn? Oh, spoilers! To impress Bella as Alpha, to kill Edward, to go after the Cullens, or to protect Bella from being killed by the pack?
Well, spoiler alert, but it's to protect Bella from being killed by the pack.
But also to potentially kill Edward.
That's always on his mind. He's like, if I can kill Edward while I'm protecting Bella, then so be it, but...
Another spoiler's coming up.
All right, and finally, who does Jacob imprint on in Breaking Dawn? Bella, Leah, Renesmee, or nobody?
I wonder who.
Nobody.
Rootin' tootin'. Renesmee. Wow. You really know your Jacob facts. I'm impressed. Welcome to the pack. I'm assuming you also got 11 out of 11, right? Okay. So we scored better than 100% of all other quiz takers.
Great.
What does that mean?
Better than everyone?
Are we the best? Oh my God. So there you have it. That's how much random knowledge we have about Jacob Black from Twilight. And that pretty much is a good segue for us to talk about what this week's episode is about. So we read book two, which is Jacob's book, and basically it's just the story of Breaking Dawn and Jacob's point of view after we leave off however book one ended, which is Bella calling Rosalie asking for help after she found out that she's pregnant. Ooh. Do we have any initial feelings before I get into the summaries?
I hated reading from Jacob's point of view. Also, the names of these chapters are absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I hated writing that so badly.
It sounds like an old pop punk band song title. Like, some of these names are so dramatic. Like, Waiting for the Damn Fight to Start Already by Panic at the Disco. Like,
they're also so lengthy. Like, I feel like instead of the title of the chapter, it should have just been the first sentence of the chapter. Like, I didn't understand why they were so lengthy and wordy, which is like one of my complaints that I put in my like initial summary for the first chapter. Are there any other initial thoughts other than one, Jacob's annoying, so it was going to be a tough time for us to get through this section. Two, the titles are really, really long, so that's annoying within itself. I think another one is just like in general, I don't know why I would have such a hard time reading this section of the book, but I did.
I did too.
Like, is it because I know I'm going to be annoyed at Jacob, or is it because like my mind was elsewhere? I can't tell.
Probably both.
I guess we can get started with the summary now. Okay. So like I said, we have read book two, which is Jacob's book. And the section starts off with a preface, which only has two sentences. Life sucks and then you die. And yeah, I should be so lucky. And I was like, oh my God, Jacob is so dramatic.
I remember saying that as like a teenager. Being like,
I do too. Well, at least the first sentence, life sucks and then you die.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I couldn't remember that was what it was from. It was just one of those quotes that were so popular from the Twilight series that we knew the quote, but we forgot where it came from. So that's what the book section starts off with. And then we pick up at chapter 8, which is titled Waiting for the Damn Fight to Start Already. Like we said, this is kind of going to be the start of many long-winded Jacob chapter titles. And when I was reading them, I just got really annoyed because of how long they were. And they sounded more like the first sentence of a chapter rather than like the title of a chapter, if that makes any sense. Anyway. So the chapter starts off with Paul hanging out at Jacob's house. It turns out that Paul imprinted on Jacob's older sister, Rachel, who he randomly met at the beach when she was home for the summer from college. And then due to the nature of attraction from imprinting, that would mean that Paul wasn't going anywhere if he wasn't around Rachel. And then if you just considered it in the grand scheme of things, often Jacob and Paul would argue and play fight with each other even before Paul ended up imprinting on Jacob's sister. But this would evidently increase because they are now, you know, closer in proximity to each other. And so they're always going to be on each other's nerves. Jacob started to randomly come up with many scenarios in his head, though, like not even thinking about Paul. Suddenly he's like thinking about how the Cullens would break the news to Charlie that Bella wasn't coming back, at least not as a human in the near future. And to escape his own thoughts, as well as Paul's constant presence at home, Jacob made his way to the beach where he would encounter Quill and the child that Quill implanted on Claire. The two were playing a game of treasure hunt on the beach when Jacob approached them. And Jacob himself would find it really, really strange that Quill would be so incredibly enamored with Claire when other parents normally don't look that happy when they're playing pretend with their own children. And as the two boys spoke to each other, Jacob would eventually ask Quill if he'd consider finding another person to date and spend time with until Claire became of age. But likewise, Quill would also ask Jacob the same thing. If he'd consider getting a life, since it's been way past Jacob's chance of ever being with Bella since she married Edward. Sam would signal to both boys that the wolves needed to gather, so they made their way back to the rest of the pack. The big announcement from everyone's favorite werewolf, Seth, was that Bella and Edward had returned from their honeymoon, but the current story was that Bella had contracted an illness from their time in South America on their honeymoon and is currently under quarantine. Charlie, in his state of despair, would call Billy to relay his frustrations because Charlie himself wouldn't be able to see Bella in person. And at Carlisle's request, it was deemed too dangerous for Charlie to put himself at risk of also contracting this like supposed sickness. The pack would discuss if this honeymoon sickness were true or if it was just a ploy to get Charlie away from Bella because she's actually a vampire. So is Bella now a vampire, meaning that the treaty was broken, or was she still human but just really sick from the trip? After kind of going through all these different potential things, Sam didn't find this information enough for them to take action and attack the Cullens. Meanwhile, Jacob was too far gone in his own fit of anger to listen to their reasoning. He was aware that they weren't going to do anything as part of the pack, but in his mind, Jacob started to plan a solo attack against the Cullens. Dun, dun, dun. And that's how that chapter ends.
The entire storyline about Quill and Claire is just so uncomfortable. And it's so wrong. Like, they say that Quill is going to be like Claire's big brother until she's old enough to need a lover. But one, when does that switch happen? As soon as she turns 18, is she going to all of a sudden like him? Or is she going to be a teenager like falling for this man? Also, isn't it a little weird to like start falling for your big brother figure anyway?
It is.
The entire concept is just so bizarre to me, and it's so unnecessary.
There is no situation in which this pairing makes sense, especially if the end game for Quill and Claire is that it ends up in a romantic relationship for the both of them. Like, there's no way that this makes, like, it's just wrong.
How does that happen? And does he, like, not feel any romantic feelings until she turns 18? Like, how does this happen? Where does the switch happen? Is she gonna turn, like, 14 and he's gonna be like, wow, she's really looking good? Like,
oh my god. Oh my god. Oh, I put down that I forgot that Paul would end up imprinting on Jacob's sister. Like, I just completely forgot about that piece of information. But like, good for him, I guess.
Speaking of Paul, this is just a really random quote that I like didn't understand at all. When Jacob's sitting there getting annoyed with Paul and he like stalks away, it says, "I stood there for a second and then I stalked off to my room, muttering about alien abductions." I don't understand that. Not at all. Up until this point, has there been any mention of alien abductions? And just all of a sudden, Jacob's like irritated. So he's going to run away and just be like, fucking goddamn aliens. Like, I don't understand. Where's the context for that line? Another random thing I have is I don't understand why they need to keep pack secrets away from the families of people in the pack. Like, Embry and Colin's families know nothing about them being werewolves. They think they're just being, like, weird, defiant teenagers. But why can't they know?
I think it's also that, wasn't it Embry's mom that she seemed like an outsider from the way that they, like, described her?
Yeah, and I don't get that. Like, is it just them whose family isn't involved? And if so, why?
I don't know.
Like, why does Sue know about stuff? Harry Clearwater wasn't one of the like elders or whatever, but two of her kids are wolves and she knows. Why does Sue get to know, but poor Colin's mom doesn't get to know?
Beats me.
Her kid is like a rebellious brat and really he's a whole ass werewolf.
About poor kid that. He literally gets grounded for like sneaking off in the middle of the night, but it's not like he can help it.
I know, like, why can't they tell them? I feel like if they just communicated it would be fine.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Rather, they don't want to bring people into it that don't need to be in it. But your child is a wolf. You are already in it.
Oh, didn't it say something about Quill's mom being No, Embry's mom being like, or like sleeping with one of the fathers of the other guys, meaning that Embry is one of the half siblings of, you know, someone, or yeah, one of the siblings of someone.
I forgot about that.
I can't remember who.
Gino, especially. This woman's making her way through the elders, has a werewolf son, and she literally is not a clue. I'm scared of her power.
I would be so angry.
Nobody was going to tell me?
No one was going to tell me that if I slept with this man, my child would be a werewolf.
How did this happen?
I can't believe this. Almost forgot that part, that Embry is technically like a secret sibling of one of the boys.
I had completely forgotten that already.
Yeah, that's all I have. I guess now that means it's time for chapter 9, which is titled, sure as hell didn't see that one coming. And Jacob would make his way back to his house after the pack meeting. He grumbled some more about how Paul was always around the house, and then he complained to his dad Billy about Sam's decision pertaining to Bella and the Cullens. And before Jacob would leave the house, Billy tried to keep him from running off again. Not making any promises, Jacob had taken his bike out for a ride because he just really couldn't handle his emotions about everything. And somehow this would lead Jacob driving up to the Cullens' house. When he got to the door, Carlisle was the one who greeted him, but Carlisle was warning Jacob that this was a really bad time to visit. Bella had voiced that she wanted Jacob to come in because she didn't really see a point in keeping this secret away from him too. Jacob could tell that Bella was still human, but also really sick. And it wasn't until Bella tried to get off the couch that Jacob would realize what had happened to Bella. And what happened is that she's pregnant! Dun, dun, dun! And he would quickly tell that the fetus was kind of harming her from the inside out. So Edward caught wind of Jacob's aggressive thoughts and he took him outside so that the both of them could talk. Edward would basically reveal that he doesn't want Bella to keep the fetus because it was basically killing her from the inside. And the two of them made a pact that Jacob could kill Edward if Bella ended up not making it out of this pregnancy alive. Somewhere along the line, though, they also would discuss the idea that Jacob would try to talk Bella out of carrying this fetus to term. And if he was successful in doing so, and Bella still wanted to have a child, Bella could have a child with Jacob as the father. And at first, Jacob would think that this idea was really, really obscene. But of course, he would be tempted to find just like the potential of it coming true. So they agreed to this deal. And that was the end of the chapter. And I ended this chapter being like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, that makes no sense. Like, why would you think that that would work?
I read that section of just like Edward saying, well, if Bella wants to have a child, then, you know, she could do it with you, Jacob. And I'm just like, where
does the logic come from? What do you think that Bella would want that?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that one really rubbed me the wrong way when I read that. So that was the end of chapter 9. Do you have any notes, Tori?
I feel so bad for Billy. Like, could you imagine, like, your wife is dead, your daughters don't want to come home because it reminds them of their mom, and now your angsty ass son is like, I'm gonna run away, you're never gonna see me again, and I'm not telling you where I'm going, fuck you, dad. Speaking of Billy, I was absolutely cracking up because he was saying that he was tired because he wheeled himself home from Sue's house.
Yeah.
And Jacob's like, it's all downhill, though. He's like, yeah, I probably got up to like 30 miles an hour. I'm just thinking, Billy in his wheelchair going down this hill at 30 miles an hour. Terrifying. I was cracking up reading that.
He has a need for speed.
For real. It like kills me how much projection Jacob does. Like, he's convinced that as soon as Edward hears his plan, Edward's gonna want to fight him one-on-one and take him down, and all he's gonna care about is fighting Jacob. When has that ever been the case? When has Edward ever wanted to fight Jacob? He's always like, hello Jacob, I'm very glad you're here, thank you. I love you. You can kiss my wife if you want, have kids with her please. Edward's gonna want to kill me and I'm ready for it. Like, do you know anything, Jacob? For somebody who claims he's so aware, he literally knows nothing.
Yeah, it's funny that up to this point Jacob hasn't gotten the hint either that, you know, whatever impression of Edward and like how he thinks Edward's gonna react to things, like Edward never does. So why does Jacob keep thinking Edward's gonna react poorly?
Yeah, that has not happened yet. Mm-hmm. Also, Jacob's like, oh, well, when the Cullens kill me, Sam's probably going to say that I deserved it. He's going to want to be on the side of his bloodsucker BFFs. But I'm sorry, if you charge at them for no reason and you die, that was your fault. Like, why'd you do that?
Plus, I feel like if that situation were to even happen, I don't think the Cullens would have teared him to pieces. I feel like they have enough strength to, like, pin him down so that that wouldn't happen.
The only other thing I have is that when Jacob finds out that Bella's pregnant, he's like not worried about her health. He's not concerned if she's gonna survive. He's just pissed that Edward was, quote, inside of her. I was like, that's absolutely disgusting. But like, that's what you're worried about? He was like, I can't believe that he was in her and took seed in her womb. That's absolutely disgusting, first of all. And second, that's all you're concerned about? This bitch is like dying. And you're like, I can't believe she got dicked down by someone else.
Yeah, I can't believe that was even written. I read that line and I went, this is put in words?
It was so bad. Why did she write that?
I really don't know. So that line, or the way that he described the moment that he realized Bella was pregnant, knocked me out. The other one is when Edward suggested that Jacob should have a child with Bella. That's literally
what is this chapter?
I was like, I don't understand what's going on, but I don't like it.
Do you have any other notes for this section?
No, that's pretty much it. I feel like we've been on this section for years.
I know, it's just never ending.
But okay, so now we're over at chapter 10, which is called Why Didn't I Just Walk Away? Oh, right, because I'm an idiot.
Name.
Woo. And after their little discussion, Edward and Jacob return to the house and they both approach Bella. Rosalie is quick to deny Jacob any access to get closer, though, because she has now taken on this protective role over Bella and the growing fetus. Jacob is, though, surprised to find that Bella and Rosalie are getting along now, because in the past, he could recall Bella mentioning that, you know, Rosalie wasn't really fond of her and maybe she didn't like her. But Bella still manages to convince Rosalie that, you know, it'll be okay. And so they leave the two of them alone so that they can talk. Except for very quickly, their conversation would turn into an argument, which honestly doesn't really surprise me. Basically, Jacob scolds Bella for putting herself in such a life-threatening situation. And Bella defends herself by saying that something good's going to come out after this. Also later adds that the reason that she's so optimistic is because she doesn't plan on surviving this pregnancy as a human, but instead as a vampire. Jacob ends their little catch-up session by saying that he's not going to come back to visit while she's still human because he doesn't want to watch her die. And upset again, Jacob leaves the house, this time ignoring his bike, and he just transforms into his wolf form. But while in this state, the rest of the wolves were able to kind of see his thoughts and experiences that he'd had when he was over at the Cullen's house. So now that everyone is on the same page, the pack decide that they have to do something about this like supernatural creature that's brewing within Bella. Sam and the rest of the pack then prepare for an encounter. Meanwhile, Jacob finds that he suddenly has a change of heart and he's not 100% on board with attacking the Cullens. Sam utilizes his alpha wolf status, basically so that he can command all the wolves to abide to his instructions. And unable to break from this new pack rule, Jacob is kind of trapped with having to comply with Sam's demands. And that's how that chapter ends. That's what happens in chapter 10.
Everybody just does a complete 180. And mm-hmm. I don't understand it. And if you believe one thing in the beginning of this chapter, you believe the complete opposite now. Unless you're Seth. He just loves the Cullens all the time. But
Seth is the only consistent character I find.
He's the only one I like at this point.
Mm-hmm. So apparently on page 193, Jacob's basically like asking Bella why she has this sudden desire for motherhood. And I also was like, yes, I remember thinking that exact same thing when Bella's spine like suddenly was like, I want to be a mother now. The other thing, though, is that I think like a few pages afterwards, there's a point in which Bella is like talking down on alternative methods of being pregnant. And I was like, what? What is this girl saying? She's like basically saying that she, I don't know, doesn't think it's right to get pregnant in like literally alternative methods. Like if you're unable to get pregnant by having sex, doing it. I forget what the term is called, but I guess like when they like inject something into the eggs. Yeah. And that I was like, I don't like the way she's talking about that. That's not nice.
Like Bella, you didn't even know you could have a kid with your husband until like a week and a half ago. You're one to talk.
Mm-hmm. You can't be talking down on people who might have to resort to these alternative methods because they aren't able to do it, you know, a different way.
That is really weird. And I wonder if it was written like that because of like Stephanie Meyer's beliefs, and like I'm not sure if that's how the like what Mormons believe, but do they think that like I know they really strongly believe that a woman's job is to have the children. Do they think that if you can't do that, then you're just not a good enough woman?
I guess that, or like, it's not natural if you were to get pregnant in a different way kind of thing. I don't know. I read it more as like someone projecting a different type of like thought and personality into Bella, because like it just didn't make sense that Bella would say that. It also bothered me that that was what Bella had said. Maybe it's more of that Mormon.
It's weird like reading these books and finding the religious like subtext that I'd never picked up on as a child.
Mm-hmm. These series of episodes is us realizing that there are a lot more Mormon influences in this writing than you expected. Or even just like strong religious impressions in all of the writing and all the characters and their decision making.
I don't understand why everybody completely changes their thoughts like out of nowhere. Sam and the pack were so ready to protect the Collins and defend them and say that they thought they were fine, but now you hear about this fetus and you don't think that the Collins are going to do everything in their power to keep people safe. Like, do they just think that they're going to let this fetus run wild and free through Forks, Washington? Like, I don't get it. Why don't you trust them anymore? It just seems like a theme throughout all of these books is a character is going to think a way until they're supposed to think that way. And then their thinking completely changes. And now they have to be the one to change everybody else's mind. Like,
sounds about right.
That's like Stephanie Meyer's go-to writing device.
Yeah, you're right. That is definitely how it is.
Also, Jacob keeps calling Bella a martyr, and I don't get why. What is she like trying to die to save? She's just making everybody's life more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he thinks that she's some hero who's coming to save the day, but really everybody would just end up dead because of her. Like,
mm-hmm. I know. But it's also not like, because if you're a martyr, that means you've already died to save people, but she hasn't yet.
She hasn't saved anybody.
Yeah.
It just like, shows how like whack his perception of her is. He literally knows nothing about her, even though he claims to know her more than anybody else. Just because you notice that she didn't like music, you think that she's know her inside and out. Weird.
I think the other note that I had, I mean, even though we kind of know that the whole process of Bella going through this pregnancy is going to be a mess, at least Carlisle isn't pressuring her to do something with her body that she doesn't want to do. At like Carlisle as the authoritative doctor figure, he's like, well, if the patient wants this, then I'm gonna follow their wishes.
Yeah, I think it's dumb of her to do, but I understand Carlisle's point of view. Because if you make her get rid of the thing, then you're taking away a woman's choice to her body. And Carlisle's not going to be about that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, both Edward and Carlisle are like, this is what Bella wants. And we're going to try to like help her get through it. Even though they know that, you know, there's a high risk and dangerous aspect to Bella wanting to continue this pregnancy and stuff like that. But I mean, I just thought that that was interesting to think about, that like the authoritative figure isn't trying to control a woman's ability to choose what she wants to do with her body. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that is interesting. And especially because Rosalie is so like, yeah, Bella wants to keep it. But could you imagine if Bella wanted to get rid of it? Rosalie would be the first one on Bella. Like, you can't do that. It's interesting that the guys are the ones that are like, do what you want with your body, girl.
That is true. I feel like I did know Rosalie's point, but I didn't even think about it in this context. But yeah, that's true.
Alice too. Like, she's not for it. I think that they said that Alice is like kind of pissed that Bella's going through with it. Is she also like, I'm not here for this?
Well, Alice has been in general avoiding Bella, which I think I will end up covering at some point in this summary. But yeah. At the moment, Alice is also not having a fun time with just like dealing with whatever's going on with this pregnancy, which we're going to uncover as we go through more of the summary. Is there anything else before I move on to the next chapter summary?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay, so the next chapter is chapter 11, and it's titled The Two Things at the Top of My Things I Never Want to Do List. yet another long-winded title that I just really love. So Sam starts to get his wolves into formation while Jacob continues to feel really uneasy about their impending attack, reverting to his memories of the whole alpha lineage and knowing that Jacob himself should have been the alpha instead of Sam. He ends up unleashing this wolf power birthright, and he's able to unshackle himself from Sam's demands. Once this happens, though, Sam and Jacob both discuss kind of the implications of what Jacob has now decided to do. Should he continue to basically go on with this path where he is now also an alpha and thus no longer a part of Sam's pack? Unable to meet in the middle, though, Jacob runs off, and not long after, Seth follows behind him. But when Jacob realizes that Seth is on his tail, he tells him to go back to the rest of the pack. But then Seth mentions that, you know, they can't hear the other wolves' thoughts anymore. And that basically clicks that the separate packs are no longer connected by each other's thoughts. This also confirms that Seth is now a part of Jacob's path. And the two of them continue running towards the Cullens' house in order to warn them of Sam's plans. Edward thankfully was able to start hearing Jacob's thoughts, calling out to him with the news, and then he thanks the two of them for warning the family about the potential dangers. And when Jacob approaches the house, he catches a glimpse through the window, hoping to see Bella in the same state or much better than he last saw her, but unfortunately her condition has gotten worse. And then, heartbroken by this sight, Jacob turns around and he runs back to where Seth was patrolling. And that's how chapter 11 goes. I only have one note, and there's a point where Edward calls Jasper Jazz, and I was like, when has he ever called Jasper Jazz?
Oh yeah, isn't he like Jazz?
Yeah, I was like, when has he ever called his brothers by a nickname?
Yeah, that is really weird. The only thing I have is a quote from Jacob, like, talking about the Cullens, and it says, "They aren't enemies. They never have been until I really thought about destroying them. Thought it through. I didn't see that." Like, no shit. You're just now realizing they're not your enemies. Like, you're literally about to go kill them, and you're at their front door with a knife. Like, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best option.
Maybe we should reevaluate this.
He's literally like, wait. Never mind. I like them now. It like keeps making me think of that TikTok that's like, I hate. Wait, I'm done hating. Today is love. I love today. That's Jacob. Jacob with the Cullens. I hate the Cullens. Wait, I love the Cullens.
I also, in a weird way, forgot this too, that Jacob would, you know, regain his status of being an alpha wolf and kind of create his own pack. I totally forgot that was a thing that happened in this story. And now I know. Also, that Seth was able to choose what pack he wanted to belong to. I was like, is that a thing?
Yeah, how does that work? Because if you're able to do that, then that implies that
you have a choice.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't think this is very thought through.
Didn't Jacob literally complain when he was still under Sam? You know, he couldn't go back on the alpha's commands because the alpha used, like, whatever special alpha power they have. So then how was Seth able to break ties with Sam's pack and join Jacob's? Like, I don't understand that part.
I don't know. I don't get it. And how was Jacob even able to, like, gain that alpha power and break apart if he was under the command of another alpha and had given up his? It makes no sense, and it's dumb a little bit.
Man, Teen Wolf didn't teach me about this.
I don't think that's how Wolverine works, but I don't know, so I can't.
How would we know how the werewolf world works? We don't know.
You look like a werewolf? No, so I don't know.
Is there anything else?
Nope, that's all I have for that chapter. I didn't have much.
Okay, it was pretty straightforward. So now for chapter 12, which is called "Some People Just Don't Grasp the Concept of Unwelcome." I'm telling you, these chapter titles are sentences. They're not titles.
That one really sounds like the name of a song from like a 2004 pop punk group.
"Some like, People Just Don't Grasp the Concept of Unwelcome" by Fall Out Boy.
Honestly.
Anyway, so Jacob was in the middle of sleeping when Seth's howl woke him up, and Leah has now appeared before them, but not as a messenger on behalf of Sam's pack. Leah is actually there to follow under Alpha Jacob. Angered and a little bit surprised by this new development, though, Jacob declines her admission to their, quote, pack and basically tells her to go home. But Leah presents her reasonings, mostly that she wanted to be free of her ex-boyfriend and former pack leader, Sam, as well as the fact that she couldn't even leave her brother Seth by himself. He's a baby. She has to watch over him. Unable to really stop Leah from changing her mind, Jacob reluctantly allows her to join their patrols, protecting the Cullens despite her hatred of vampires, which that's also another added thing. Leah hates vampires and also the Cullens. So then Jacob makes his way to the Cullen house and he's greeted by Carlisle again. They go over Bella's current condition and at this moment, still not looking bright for her. The doctor basically explains that the fetus is too strong for Bella's human body and it's keeping Bella from being able to absorb any of the nutrients that she needs to survive. So Carlisle admits that in this moment, he isn't really sure what it is that the fetus wants and it's kind of dampening his outlook on the whole situation. The two of them go into discussing the differences in chromosomes for humans and vampires and even werewolves. And then Jacob starts to speculate in his mind that, you know, maybe the fetus is more vampire than human. And all of this means that this fetus might be craving something that maybe humans might not be urgently searching for, which is blood. Ooh. So when the two of them return to the rest of the group in the house, Edward asks Rosalie if she could join Carlisle, Jacob, and himself for a quick discussion. Rosalie, again hesitant to leave Bella's side, asks Esme to mind her for a moment, and they all have their discussion. Edward mentions that he kind of overheard and would understand Jacob's thought process about the blood, and he wonders if, you know, maybe should they give it a try to give Bella blood in order to satisfy the needs of the fetus? And when Rosalie hears this, she kind of agrees that it's also a good idea and reminds Carlisle that they have a stockpile of human blood set aside for Bella anyway. I don't actually know if they talk about this in the book itself, but I'm assuming that we're just supposed to understand that the intention for this like stockpile of human blood was for Bella to use after she turned into a vampire. But obviously, because there are just more pressing issues that need to be addressed, they're going to use it for this reason. So they all agree that they're going to run the idea by Bella. And even though Jacob thinks this whole idea is so repulsive, he just kind of lets them continue on with what they're doing. When they tell Bella, she agrees and then jokingly asks who's catching her a grizzly bear to feed off of. But Carlisle clarifies that the fetus is probably looking for human blood, not animal blood. And then Bella makes another poorly timed joke before she willingly agrees to drink the human blood. And that's what happens in this chapter.
Why did nobody think that maybe the fetus wanted blood up until now? It's a half vampire. Why did nobody even consider it?
I don't know. And I think I've said this before with another situation where I'm like, you have all these vampires who have lived a long time, are seemingly very intelligent, and they couldn't think of a plan for whatever situation comes up. And this is another one of those instances.
It's always the dumbest person coming up with the, like, what makes sense.
With the solution.
Yeah, it's either Bella or Jacob coming up with the solutions. Where does that make sense? These vampires are, like, old as fuck, smart as fuck. Why can't they figure it out? It's, like, mm-hmm. annoying.
I'm, like, surprised that Carlisle did not think of it. So if you dumb it down to, like, our earliest science classes and they do those tables where you have one parent and another parent and one parent has one trait and the other parent has another, the offspring is going to have a little bit of both of them. So I don't know why they didn't think, oh, maybe this fetus wants blood because it's half vampire. It doesn't make sense that they didn't think of that. They didn't even think about it. They didn't do the table. That's why they didn't know. And I guess the other thing is the same with like us asking about Seth being able to join Jacob's pack. I'm like, how did Leah do it?
Yeah, like, I don't understand how she just willingly left Sam's pack. I feel so bad for Leah. Imagine every day having to hear your like ex-boyfriend's thoughts and like knowing he doesn't want you there, but you can't go anywhere.
That's so, I feel so bad for her. Also in general, Leah is like, she has the worst possible situation to deal with. Not only is she dealing with like, you know, just being stuck under the commands of her ex-boyfriend, hearing his thoughts, dealing with him almost daily, but like she's the only woman in the pack and is always being considered as an outsider and stuff like that. Like, that's not a good situation to be in. I always feel bad for her. I'm like, poor Leah.
I know, like, no wonder she's so, like, defensive and mm-hmm. standoffish. People are like, oh, Leah's such a bitch. Maybe you're just, like, not welcoming to her.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of thoughts about Leah, but I'll save them for later chapters because okay. we'll get more into
yeah, we do. Stuff. We do learn more about Leah, so we'll probably dive deeper into that. Is there anything else for chapter 12?
The only other thing I have is there was a quote about they can't get an ultrasonic image or something because Carlisle couldn't get a needle through her amniotic sac, but even if he could, Rosalie wouldn't agree with it. Why can't you get an ultrasound? Like, why isn't she okay with that? It's not gonna kill the baby.
I don't know.
Like, does she think that they're gonna find out more about the vampire fetus and then want to kill it? Or like, what is her reasoning for not letting them do that?
Maybe she's worried that, like, whatever. I don't really know how those, like, imaging technologies work, but maybe she's worried that the technology could harm the fetus.
Yeah, that was literally the only thing I could figure out. I was just reading that, like, why wouldn't she let her do that?
I know, it's just an ultrasound to see what is the sex of the baby.
That's all. Yeah,
even if the baby is, like, healthy or not. But yeah, that is weird. That Rosalie was like, no, you're not allowed. you can't do it. Okay, so now we are at chapter 13, which is called Good Thing I've Got a Strong Stomach. And can we expect anything less for what's literally gonna happen? So while watching Edward tend to Bella, Jacob suddenly has a better understanding as to how Leah must have felt when she would find herself around Sam and Emily. And he just out of nowhere reasons that, you know, he's not gonna blame Leah for being so miserable ever again. I just thought that was like a really random part that was just like interjected into the just like a random thing that was just interjected into the beginning of this chapter. Anyway, going back to Bella. So Rosalie made her rounds basically preparing for Bella's blood meal, and Carlisle approached Bella with a plastic cup filled with the blood, but it was disguised in a way that it would just kind of appear like a regular beverage. Both Carlisle and Edward did tell her, though, that, you know, they can try to go about this another way if she wasn't comfortable drinking the blood or if it was too much for her. She said she was okay. She was going to drink it out of the cup. And then after the first sip, Bella admits that the blood was appetizing, and it's also assumed that, you know, the fetus is enjoying the human blood too. And this made Jacob's stomach turn, and before that moment, he thought about actually stepping out while the Cullens tried their little experiment, but he ended up not leaving Bella's side. And after Bella finished drinking some of the blood, her condition immediately showed some improvement. Who'd have thought? You give a half vampire some blood and they like it. Bella would suddenly comment on Jacob's physical condition, and then she would ask him, you know, when was the last time he got to sleep? And she would basically offer him to, you know, sleep at the house because they definitely have the accommodations. But Jacob declines the offer and he leaves to meet up with Seth and Leah. And as soon as he goes outside, Seth howls and Jacob phases into his wolf form in order to figure out what's going on. Then it seems that there are new things happening. So Sam sent 4 of his own wolves to talk to Jacob. The 4 were Jared, Paul, Quill, and a newer wolf named Colin. And they would appear in front of Jacob, Seth, and Leah, claiming that they come in peace. So they all go through their apologies and they ask for the 3 of them to return to La Push. Jacob says, you know, he's not angry anymore and he's sorry and all that, but he's still not gonna follow Sam's wishes. And then afterwards, Jacob starts to wonder why Quill was sent to meet them without Embry, because usually the 2 would just be, you know, sent on little missions together. Later, Jacob would reason that, you know, maybe Embry wasn't allowed to go because he seemed to be the one that would crack easily and then try to end up joining Jacob's pack too. So that's probably why Sam didn't send Embry. After the confrontation, Leah reads over Jacob's thoughts and he sees Bella drinking the human blood through his memories. When Seth saw it, though, he had a little more understanding over it and he asked if he should tell the Cullens about the meeting with the other wolves. But Jacob's like, no, don't worry about it. I'll handle it. And then both Jacob and Leah joke about how it's weird that Seth's has been so calm about all of this, the vampires and the blood and the Bella. And they also joke that, you know, maybe something went wrong when Seth was a baby. And that's all that happens in this chapter.
Jacob rips his one and only pair of shorts. So he just accepts the fact that he's going to have to be naked for the rest of his life now at this point. Just like fine with it.
He's like, I guess I'm going to be naked forever.
Speaking of being naked forever, I feel so bad for Leah because they literally say like being naked was a normal, if not like awkward and inconvenient part of pack life. But like when Leah joined, then it got really awkward. I get that they're a bunch of boys, but I don't understand why it's so awkward. Like it was probably awkward being dicks out with your buddies all the time first, but they got used to it. Why couldn't they get used to Leah? They didn't even try.
I'm telling you, Leah has the worst cut in this deal.
Yeah, she does.
It's so unfair for her that she has to deal with all this BS.
Especially when Jared comes in, is like trying to guilt trip everybody back. And he's like telling Leah that Sam misses her and is like calling her by her old nicknames and all of this stuff, saying he just wants her back. That's so gross. I hate it.
I was like, what? How? That would not make me want to come back. That would make me want to go away.
No.
So I only had one note. That was just like the whole concept of Bella just being okay with wanting to drink the blood. Because doesn't Bella have some like insane reaction to just the scent of blood in which she would like faint or feel really sick? And yet now she's like, oh, I'll drink it. And she just does. Like, I don't know. It. And she likes it. Like, maybe that's because of the half vampire baby that's in her. But like, I was so confused because literally in the first Twilight book, she's like, oh no, blood is bad for me. And then the same thing goes with New Moon. And then now she's just like, okay, I like to drink blood now.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Like, does the essence of the fetus just take over her entire body? And she's like, my senses are now this fetus. I smell the blood and I enjoy. Like,
wouldn't that make her body weaker to, like, if she already had a negative effect to the scent of blood as a, quote, healthy human, now as a very, very weak human, wouldn't you think that would make her even worse off if she were to smell blood?
I mean, you would think.
It just doesn't make sense.
Speaking of blood, I like lost it when Jacob was finding out that they had bags of blood for Bella, and he was like, what all house of horror stuff do they keep around here? Fridge full of blood? Check. What else? Torture chamber? Coffin room? Carlisle's a doctor treating a very sick woman, a pregnant woman. Of course they probably got blood. Like, the bitch probably needed a transfusion or two.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he like, oh, torture chamber? It's blood. It's literally bags of blood.
I know. It's not like they killed somebody in order to extract the blood that they possessed. It was bought legally through blood banks, or, you know, wherever doctors are able to get blood.
I know. Where does the torturing part come in with the blood? Are they gonna like smack each other with the little baggies? Like, where? What's the torture?
He's something else.
You know. Do you have any other notes for this chapter?
Nah, that's kind of it. All right. So now for chapter 14, which is called, you know, things are bad when you feel guilty for being rude to vampires. I hate these titles so much.
I know.
All right. So Jacob returns to the Cullen house, but he isn't immediately greeted by anyone. He finds a pile of folded clothes on the stairs, though, which I guess is good for him because he's not going to be naked anymore. And he puts them on before he enters the house. When he gets there, though, the living room looks more like a livable space instead of an ICU. So that's good. And Bella notices that Jacob's arrived and she's really happy to see him, which... great. Awesome. That's good to hear. So Edward tells Jacob that he's heard most of the conversation between Sam's delegates and Jacob's pack. And he also mentions that he and Carlisle seem to be a little bit concerned with potentially crossing paths with Sam's pack because the Cullens have to go out to hunt and they don't want to cause any further trouble. That, along with Esme's worry about Jacob's pack being homeless and hungry, she offers them food and clothes and a place to stay in their human form if they wish to take it. And I'm like, aw, Esme. So cool. Such a loving mother. And then returning back to the living room, Bella is suddenly in pain again. Turns out the fetus has fractured one of Bella's ribs. So As Bella regained some of her strength with the blood diet, so has the fetus. And now with most of the family tending to Bella, who have now relocated upstairs, Alice is left downstairs with Jacob. Jacob asks why Alice isn't also upstairs and also mentions that he sees her a whole lot less around Bella now. Alice admits that being around Bella gives her headaches. And I was like, me too. So the developing fetus is actually something that Alice isn't able to see in her visions. And since the fetus and Bella share one body at the moment, it's really hard for Alice to see much of Bella's future either. Like, she can only see like a few minutes in the future. And because this is really tough for Alice to process, she kind of describes it like watching a television that only shows you static. And I'm like, oh, that sucks. So after their little chit chat, Jacob falls asleep, but then he's reawakened due to a nightmare where he was really thirsty and he drank bleach instead of water, which was enough to freak him out. But when he wakes up, Seth is now at the Cullen house and he has his arm around Bella, assumingly keeping her warm. And unlike Jacob, Seth's level of comfort around the Cullens is like significantly higher because he also has like a plate of food in front of him. And I'm sure he didn't try to resist any of the accommodations that the Cullens tried to give Seth while he was in the house. Jacob leaves the house again to join up with Leah to patrol and go out hunting. And before Jacob fully exits the house, Carlisle stops him and asks for advice pertaining to the vampires leaving to hunt and how they should go about it. And then they come up with a plan on how the Cullens are going to start going out for hunting trips. And Esme again asks Jacob to take something for he and Leah to eat before they continue their patrols.
The only notes I really have are how much I love Seth. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't care that the vampires made the cinnamon rolls. He's just like, these are some damn good cinnamon rolls. He's like enjoying them, living his happy little life. And also Esme is the cutest. She's like, please don't consider yourself without the benefits of a home.
Aww.
We've got food here. We've got beds, we've got everything, please, you're not homeless. I love her. That's so cute. Every time like these books say something about Esme, I'm just like, I would be Esme if I was a vampire. I would just be trying to feed people and restore old houses. Love her.
Sounds like a good gig to have. This is this chapter is kind of the beginning of what's been going on with Alice, because for a while you're like, oh, we haven't heard from Alice, and now you do. So unfortunately, Alice is like, there's almost like a barrier in which Alice cannot break in order to approach or even interact with Bella. And that probably sucks.
That probably sucks for her. Giving me migraines.
She was giving me headaches.
That's the only notes I have, is that I love Seth and I love Esme.
I also do wonder, why cinnamon rolls? Why did they make cinnamon rolls? I'm trying to think of the like nutritional value in that.
Knows Bella ate all the eggs. I don't know.
Maybe they couldn't make eggs and bacon for the boys, for the wolves.
For the wolves.
So if there's nothing else for chapter 14 notes, now we are at chapter 15, which is titled Tick Tock, Tick Tock, Tick Tock. In this chapter, Jacob and Seth start off with another one of their many patrols while Leah is sleeping, and Jacob makes a mental note that it's gotten a little bit stranger that there's less aggression between he and Leah compared to when they were both under Sam's pack. Instead of their usual verbal jabs at each other, it feels more awkward because he kind of can get a sense that Leah's trying really hard not to be a burden to Jacob. And then Seth intervenes Jacob's thoughts with another update, and this time it's from when Seth was last at the Cullen house. So he tells him that Carlisle plans to take a trip in order to buy more blood for Bella because the supply that they had on hand is quickly depleting. He adds that Bella has broken yet another rib, but that it's all taped up and it's been dealt with, so she's quote, okay. Along with her broken bones, though, Bella's immune system isn't very good, and so she's been running a fever on and off during the course of the day. And despite all of these ailments, Bella began calling her parents, tell them that she's doing fine, or that she's, again, okay. And then the last thing that Seth adds to his update is that he's passing along the message that Bella wants Jacob to visit the house again, and also that Alice wants Jacob to return too, but more so that he can distract Alice's mind. And reluctant to stay too far away from Bella, Jacob visits her again. He asks her when the baby's going to be due, since Bella still plans on carrying this fetus to full term, whatever that means in this really skewed timeline. He would realize, though, that Bella probably had somewhere around 4 more days left of her pregnancy. And then the two of them talk about their bond and how Jacob could have left a while ago if he was so bothered by her, but he keeps coming back anyway. There's a lot of interjection in which Rosalie and Jacob fight a lot and like just verbally assault each other. And in this situation, there's a point where Jacob throws food at Rosalie's hair, which that's not cool, dude. And then Carlisle, Edward, and Jacob return to their conversation about the species chromosomes. And Jacob remembers a time in which the Collins had said that only vampire and werewolf teeth would be strong enough to break through the womb's protective barrier. And so there are very few options on how they expect to deliver this half vampire baby. And I think when I read that part, I was like, that's weird.
Yeah.
They have to bite through it instead of using like a scalpel. But yeah, so that's how that chapter ends.
I really have like no notes for this chapter.
The only thing I had is that I was getting so upset that Jacob was saying such awful things to Rosalie.
Yeah.
Like so many gosh darn blonde jokes. And I'm like, but why?
So boring. All of his blonde jokes were so boring. Yeah. She's like, I heard that one.
I'm just like, why are you, like, what is the point of that?
I was so annoyed when he threw the food at her and got food in her hair and she did nothing. She's just like, you got food in my hair. And then that's it. Like, bitch, fight him.
She should have beat him up.
In her hair.
Rosalie fights grizzly bears. She can fight a werewolf on her own.
Honestly.
The other note that I had was, so apparently on page 302, they talked about how they knew there were similar stories of like supernatural babies born from human mothers. And in my head, I was like, so they knew this, but they didn't try to warn Bella like, hey, based off of history and stories, it seems like this is a really bad idea, but I guess not.
They think everything else is a myth. Like, I don't understand why they don't believe in anything. Like, you're a vampire and you don't think that it's possible for another legend to be true.
Mm-hmm.
The same goes for Jacob, too. Like, he's a werewolf and there's still things he's like, is this actually true? How can this be true? Like, why is nobody open-minded at all? Like, you're literally a supernatural creature. You don't think that other legends and other stories could have some truth to them, weirdo.
It's so bizarre that these stories exist for a reason in this world, and yet none of them think that it's true. Even very though selfish. Their existence is supposed to not be true, and yet it is. All right, home stretch, guys. We're almost there. So now we are at chapter 16, which is called Too Much Information Alert. And Jacob and Leah talk about how Sam has probably prioritized his guard to the area of La Push instead of like the Greater Forks area. And this turns into the two of them talking about how, you know, it hasn't been the worst thing that they were working together in the same pack. Leah tells Jacob that, you know, she wants to continue being a part of his pack because it's a lot more freeing than being under Sam's leadership. And she also promises again that she's not going to be a burden and that, you know, after Bella births this vampire baby, Seth's going to go back home and continue schooling and that she herself is going to continue to community college and stuff like that. Jacob warns, though, that after Bella has faced the end of her human life, it's going to take a little while for him to get back to normal. But Leah says that she would rather deal with his pain than her own. Dun, dun, dun. Leah also admits that she kind of understands why Rosalie has been acting the way that she is with Bella's pregnancy. And within her reasonings, she kind of reveals more of her own story in which she herself is not able to produce children and how that, along with the mysteries of the wolf pack, kind of make her feel as if she's like a dead end because she's not able to continue the lineage of wolfhood and how that also makes her not worthy. And I'm like, this is like where you really learn more about Leah. And it's honestly so heartbreaking. And then Jacob, after he hears that part from Leah, doesn't want to continue the conversation any further. And then he runs back to the Cullen house. And so now we're back at the Cullen house. Bella has broken yet another bone in her body earlier that day. And she's headed back downstairs to the living room while Jacob heads over outside to take a nap. Edward asks Bella if she'd said anything. And Bella's like, no, I didn't say anything out loud. And then Edward realizes that the fetus is talking, or at least thinking thoughts that he himself is able to read. And he tells Bella that the baby likes the sound of her voice. And then Edward and Bella get really lovey-dovey over it. Bella calls the fetus EJ. And Rosalie asks if she has a backup name in case the baby ends up being female. And then this is where Bella reveals that she thought about naming the child Renesmee after her mother, Renee, and Edward's mother, Esme. And then it's somewhere at this point that Jacob realizes that Edward's kind of gone back on his word and now loves this unborn child. And then in a sudden fit of frustration, Jacob heads for the door. But before he makes it out, Edward throws him a set of keys. And then that's it. That's how that chapter goes. And I'm like, what?
This is where I just feel so bad for Leah again. And also I'm a little confused because they're convinced that she's the only female werewolf ever in history of ever. Do they really believe that they're the only werewolves to ever exist and there could possibly never ever have been another female werewolf ever? And also there's a line where she's talking about how she might not be as female as she should be, and that's why she's a wolf. What does that mean?
I don't know.
Female as she should be?
Is it because she isn't able to reproduce? Like, is that what makes her?
I don't know. But I don't like it. And it kind of makes me feel like she's supposed to be literally just Bella's polar opposite. Like, Bella's this good girl, as we're supposed to believe, that fell in love with this nice guy and they're living. I guess as Stephanie Meyer probably wrote it, the Mormon woman's fantasy. She's getting married, she's having a beautiful family, blah, blah, blah. But it seems like Leah is meant to represent what happens when you don't follow that, when you reject femininity, and she's the only woman in this male-dominated world. And because of that, she's being punished by never having love, never having a family, never having a child. But if she had just been more feminine, been more of a woman like Bella, then she would have gotten everything she wanted, but she never will.
I didn't think of it that way. But I also am like, is Bella very feminine though? I don't really know.
She's not, but she's doing everything that you should do, you know?
Like following, I guess, like the role.
Yeah. Like she's a modest dressing married woman who waited until after marriage to have sex, and she's being rewarded by now having a family. Leah is represented as, you know, she doesn't care about being modest. She is out and open and naked in front of these guys. So she's never going to be clean enough like Bella is, you know?
That's an interesting
thought. I feel so bad for Leah.
Like I said, Leah literally, justice for Leah.
I know. Why do they just assume that she can't have a child? She's literally what, like 19, 20?
Yeah, she's
like,
still
I'm
young.
A genetic dead end. How do you know that?
I mean, and it doesn't mention that she like had tried to have kids previously and like it didn't work out, but she just says that statement. There isn't really proof of like why or how that conclusion came to be.
Like if she imprinted on some rando guy, how do they not know that she wouldn't be able to have kids? Like there's like she says that she's a genetic dead end, but like what? Are you a genealogist? Do you know this?
Are they trying to say that the wolves can only be men? Like,
I guess. I really don't know.
Like, there's so many questions I have with the, like, wolfness of this all. But we can't. There's no answers to it.
No. I just want to know what they were implying when they were saying Leah's not as female as she should be. Like, what does that mean? The only other thing I have is also about Leah. And it's about how she was saying that she kind of agrees with Rosalie. And if Bella had asked her to help her, she would have helped her as well because she would have liked to have been given that option. And I don't think that's wrong. Like, we're supposed to think that this is terrible, but it's just her accepting another woman's choice to do what she wants because she would want a woman to do the same thing for her.
Given. I know. This is literally a situation of just women supporting other women.
I know. Jacob's like, oh, how could you say that? Like, we're supposed to be flabbergasted at that. But, like, she's just doing what Bella wants.
She's just trying to support another woman and that woman's choices.
Love a pro-choice queen.
Is there anything else?
Nope. I don't have any other notes. Do you?
I think I have one. So It's around when Bella starts calling the fetus by a name, and she explains why she came up with the name Renesmee, but I don't think she explained why EJ came to be.
Isn't it just Edward Jr.?
I don't remember. Wait, but isn't Edward's father also named Edward? So wouldn't Edward be the junior?
Edward Jathird.
That's the one.
He's Edward Jr. Jr.
Edward Jr. Edward Jr. squared.
Honestly.
Yeah, I don't know if they mentioned a very clear reasoning as to why, like, what EJ stands for.
I don't know. I feel like she just wanted us to assume that it was Edward Jr. and we should just know.
Was it that it's Edward Jr. or is it really combining Edward and Jacob together?
No, maybe it is.
Maybe we'll learn more about it as we continue reading. But yeah, that's the only other spare thought that I had for this chapter. Not really much of a note, just like a thought that came up. So if there's nothing else, we can move to our next chapter, which is titled, and this is going to be a really long-winded one. So it's chapter 17, and it's called, What Do I Look Like? The Wizard of Oz? You need a brain? You need a heart? Go ahead. Take mine. Take everything I have.
So dramatic. That's the worst chapter name out of all of them.
They're really awful. It really is.
By Panic at the Disco.
By Panic at the Disco, of course. Brace yourselves, guys. So Jacob, he gets these set of keys, which are now in his hands, and he runs to the Cullen's garage. Okay. And he takes one of the cars and he drives off. He drives off so quickly and so fast that he catches a glimpse of Leah while she's on patrol, and he continues heading towards the Seattle area. He thought about a lot of what Leah was saying earlier in the day about finding someone new and stuff like that. So he tried to scout out some locations where a lot of people would gather, places like the mall or the park. He ended up settling for a big park. He ended up parking the car illegally in a handicapped space and then started observing the girls in the park, hoping that one of them would catch his attention. He was about to give up on his search until a girl spoke to him, and Jacob describes her as a familiar girl and highlights many features that were similar to Bella's. The girl makes her moves towards Jacob by talking about his fancy, fast car that he's driving and kind of hints that she would like to take a ride in the car sometime. Unfortunately for her, though, Jacob continues to resist the idea that he couldn't get over Bella, and he tells the girl that he met at the park that, you know, he should probably go and return the car that he was driving to its original owner. So on his drive back to Forks, he takes his time and drives a little more safely. And then he catches a glimpse of Sam and Jared, which was something that he anticipated, while also catching a glimpse of Leah and Seth when he got closer towards the Cullen's house. Edward greets him once he gets to the garage, and Jacob takes a moment to remember how angry he was at Edward for going back on his word, and he regrets not being able to crash Edward's car when he had the chance. Edward continues by saying that he requests that Jacob uses his authority over Sam's pack in order to keep the wolves from attacking the Cullens and trying to get to Bella, and the reasoning again for this sudden ask is because Bella's condition is kind of nearing its limit, and Carlisle hasn't returned from his blood restock mission yet. Basically, what the plan is at this point is that Carlisle is going to deliver the baby as soon as he returns, and then Jacob realizes in this moment that his time with Bella as a human is almost up, and Edward also confirms that Bella is going to make it through this pregnancy, except for not as a human. Jacob isn't really able to answer right away because he just has so much information being thrown at him at once, and after seeing Bella again, Jacob gives in and he tells Edward that he's gonna allow him. He gives them permission to turn Bella as a vampire, even though that would go against the treaty. Meanwhile, Bella gets up from the couch, but then there's a really strange ripping sound that's produced from the center of her body, and she falls over, and then seconds later she screams in agony. Rosalie was able to hold her up after she'd initially fallen, and then Bella begins to vomit blood, and that's how the chapter ends.
I have so many thoughts on Jacob's little trip to Seattle to look for someone to imprint on. Like, first off, he goes to the mall, and then he says to himself, did I really want to imprint on some girl that hung out at the mall all day? Like, what does that mean? Like, just because a girl goes to a mall once, like, put that sexism away. It isn't cute. Second, why do you think that the best place to go to find yourself a girly friend is to the playground? And third of all, say he did find someone, right? He imprinted on this little 4-year-old at the park. what's he gonna do? Walk up to the kid's mom and is like, hey, just have to inform you, I'm in love with your kid. She doesn't have a choice. Sorry. I'm gonna marry her. She's 4. Okay. I don't gotta do it now. Someday I will. Like,
honestly, in my opinion, I think this whole little section where Jacob runs, he drives off and tries to find a new mate, I was like, what was the point of this? I didn't understand why this was written in.
It literally made no sense at all. And like I said, even if he did imprint on someone, they don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say he did find someone his own age. He imprints on that girl that's talking cars with him or whatever. What if she's a lesbian, dude? She's just interested in your car. Now you imprint on her. She's got no choice but to stay with your dumbass. I feel so bad. Where is the woman's choice in this?
I think that's a big thing that we're all realizing with the whole imprinting thing.
Also, what if Jacob imprinted on a man? That'd be interesting.
I want Leah to imprint on a woman. I want Leah to imprint on a woman. I think she deserves it.
I think that all the time.
I think that's also what I was... So, because the way that it's written, it just makes it seem like whoever the person is that possesses the werewolf gene can only imprint on a woman. Like, that's just, like, the way that it sounds as we read more about it. So with that logic, that means that Leah technically would imprint on a woman. And I think that would be very possible. And honestly, I think Leah needs it. She doesn't need it, but if she would like to, that'd be great.
Right. Just the concept of imprinting is so weird. Like, when someone imprints on you, you can't leave. You can't date someone else if you're into them. It's like an arranged marriage, Loki. You're just stuck.
Does it say that the person who has been imprinted on, like, obviously they don't have a choice because the imprinter has imprinted on them, but like, does the imprinter's emotions also change too? Like, they're just also attached to you or like gravitate towards you?
It never says in the book, so I don't know. And I guess you would assume that it would kind of have the same effect, but how?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they have the quote unquote magic in their blood or whatever they're trying to push off, you know? Like,
yeah,
they're just normal ass people that these werewolves decided they were into way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that doesn't affect them emotionally. Like, how do we know that Claire is going to grow up and be into Quill?
I know, we don't. Like, it's not confirmed that that's exactly what's going to happen. But
she doesn't have a choice. Mm-hmm. It's, like, implied that that's going to happen at some point. It's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
But what if she doesn't want that? She literally has had her life decided at the age of 2.
Mm-hmm. This is like the craziest thing that has happened out of this book. The whole concept of imprinting, among other things, but one of the craziest.
How did Stephanie Meyer think of this?
Beyond my imagination, beyond my wildest dreams.
The only other thing I have is just like a random little thought, but in the book it says that the fetus can kind of tell when it's hurting Bella and it's trying to like not hurt her. I think that's kind of cute. It's like gross, but also like, aw, the baby's trying to not hurt her.
The baby's trying to like stretch its legs and it's like, oops, I accidentally overextended and I broke her rib.
Like, sorry, mom.
Hi, mom. All right. So finally, we are in our last chapter for this book section. Thank God. Well, it's chapter 18 and it's called There Are No Words for This, which is pretty accurate.
That's how I feel about this entire session.
Yeah, that's true. Me too. So as Bella is still in her unconscious but very, very bloody state, Edward and Rosalie get to work to prepare the delivery of the baby. Somewhere in the middle of the chaos, Bella regained consciousness and she began screaming for them to get the baby out of her because she thinks that the baby's suffocating. Bella herself, though, was also choking on blood as the procedure went on, which is really gross to hear. Rosalie would hold a scalpel in her hand. She told Edward that they have to make the incision into the womb now. So she tries to cut into Bella's stomach, but as more blood exits Bella's body, Rosalie suddenly becomes very thirsty and she's not able to control her urges. Jacob, seeing what's going on, lunges towards Rosalie to get her away from Bella. And then Edward calls for Alice and tells her to take Rosalie and Jasper out of the house for the moment. Now it's Jacob who's assisting Edward in the delivery tasks. He instructs Jacob to keep Bella breathing or else it's going to be too late. So Jacob starts doing CPR. Once Edward gets closer to towards the womb, he bites his way through in order to deliver the baby girl, and he calls her Renesmee. Bella weakly asks if she can hold the baby, and she holds her for a very brief moment before she yells in pain. Turns out half vampire baby tried to bite Bella's left breast as if she were trying to drink milk from her or nurse from her. And Edward immediately took Renesmee away. Bella becomes unconscious again, and Jacob resumes doing CPR to get her breathing again. A little while after that, Rosalie would regain her cool and would come back. She told the two that she was going to hold the baby so that they can continue working on Bella. Edward starts giving Bella his venom in order to try to put her back together again. Jacob becomes less and less sure if he can continue helping because it seems like there was no use. He thought that Bella was gone at this point. And so he walks away from her bloody body, heads down to the living room, realizes that he still has a strong grudge against Rosalie for the stolen motherhood while Bella had suffered through the childbirth. Jacob has this realization that Sam had been correct. This thing shouldn't have been born. And seething with intense hatred, Jacob was about to kill this baby until the baby looked up at him and then something clicked. All of his pre-existing pain and suffering towards this being was replaced with something else. Something like love, something like protection, and nothing else mattered to Jacob except for Renesmee. And that's how this section ends. Boop, 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 boop.
Why did he have imprint on the dumb baby?
God. Also, the whole birthing process, it's already kind of traumatic for, I guess, regular human births, but vampire birth, half vampire birth, does not seem pleasant either.
No, they're literally chewing on her stomach to pull the thing out. That's disgusting.
They're biting her. And then even the baby is trying to bite her, too.
Other than me hating that he imprinted on the dumb baby, the only thing that I have is there's a quote that Jacob thinks in his head, and he's like, I didn't care. She didn't care what she had done to me, letting herself be slaughtered like an animal. Why should I take her feelings into account? Not everything is about you, Jacob. Like, it's like he thinks this is a personal attack on him. Like, she kept this fetus inside of her body
to spite just him.
To get back at Jacob.
Yeah.
Like, she's really doing this just to piss you off, Jacob. So, like, yeah, don't worry about her. Like, what?
The only note that I had, and I kind of said this already before, so I think we talked about how, like, Bella having this baby was supposed to be, like, read as, like, a pro-life stance-ish kind of thing, if you consider like the Mormon view into this literature. But I don't know, as you read through these sections of like Bella going through all this physical trauma, I'm like, I don't know how anyone could read this and think, you know what, I would like to have a baby.
I know, right?
Like, it makes me not want to ever put my body through something that physically traumatic. It's like, when you read it, you're just like, I don't want to. I'm not having kids, guys. Wasn't the whole part of Bella getting pregnant and having a child meant to like sort of encourage people to do the same? But like the way that it goes through in the actual story, I'm like, this is so traumatic. I don't want to do that. I don't think anybody wants to do that. I don't recall it being this bloody in the movie. I also don't remember much of how the movie goes. So I guess when we get there, we're going to be in for a treat. Okay, so that pretty much ties up our summary of all the chapters in this section. Do you have any notes for just like what we have read overall?
I just don't understand why the Jacob chapters were included. They just seem really weird and unnecessary. It's like we've gotten everything from Bella's point of view up until this weird little blip in the story where now we're getting it from Jacob's point of view. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get why it was done. It feels very, like, fan service-y. Mm-hmm. Like, it was only put in there to get the Team Jacob girls what they want, you know?
I don't even think there's an Edwards book, because isn't the next one Bella again?
Yeah, there's no Edwards point of view.
It's literally Bella, Jacob,
and then Bella.
Yeah.
Like, why? It literally makes no sense at all. Are we supposed to, like, feel bad for him? Is this supposed to be our, like, touching, we get where Jacob's coming from? Because I'm just more annoyed at Jacob. He's so dumb.
It would make more sense for there to be something for Bella, something for Jacob, and something for Edward.
That would make sense.
But there isn't. That doesn't exist.
Nope. Like, it really feels like she just threw it in there to, like, satisfy people because Bella's ending up with Edward, so the Team Edward girlies are getting what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob girlies need something, you know?
Yeah.
They get their little book.
I was going to say, I think with just like when you consider the plot in this section, it's a lot of like Jacob running through the house, then running back to his pack, and then running through the house, and then running back to his pack. Like there really isn't much that goes on. I feel like this section could have been, rather it should have been, maybe Edward's point of view talking about like his struggles with the whole, like just trying to make sure that Bella's okay towards the whole course of this pregnancy.
Like it didn't push the plot forward at all. If anything, it was just however many chapters of nothingness.
Mm-hmm. And I don't even think it really lasted that long. Like if you consider how many days had passed, probably about a week again. So this one was a doozy for us to get through. It was longer than the first book within Breaking Dawn, and then book three is also going to be a bit of a doozy. Like we said though, as we kind of summarize each of the books, or at least for Breaking Dawn, we're going to be doing this in fourths instead of thirds. So the next section that we're going to cover is half of book three from Breaking Dawn, and then we'll do the final chunk that's left over for our last section for Breaking Dawn and go from there. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to reading the next section. It kind of takes a turn as to like what other chaotic things will go on.
Yeah, I don't think I ever read this section of the book because, like I've said before, I never finished this book. I don't remember anything because I didn't read it. So,
Well, looks like we're both going to be in for a treat, but just in different points of view. All right. Well, I think that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, you can tune in every other Monday as we fall right back into our Twilight obsession like it's 2008 again.
You can find Call in the Shots on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your usual podcasting platforms.
Come sit with us next time at lunch for more of our sparkling personalities. Bye. Bye. Bye.